So when I came over, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? Yeah. At least we got the fuck ups out of the way early.
Oh, fuck. I stepped on the goat's bowl.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it is the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
I'm the horror nerd, Todd Starooch.
Let me make this pronouncement right now. This is a first for the Imaginarium. I know this is going to shock you, so I hope you're sitting down, Todd.
I am.
I am fully clothed for the first time as we record this show.
Shut right up.
Surprising, isn't it?
Well, so first of all, allow me to thank you, because now I immediately have an image in my head of you sitting there fully clothed to replace any previous images I may have had in my head.
Well, so, if it helps, my zipper's open, and my zipper's open, my wiener is out.
Okay. Well, all right. Oh my God! Now, hopefully, London doesn't decide it's a cat toy. Oh my God! Speaking of which, dude, you know my daughter has a kitten, and the cat is 6 months old now, and she's just a blur of boundless kitten energy, you know? So I was at my daughter's apartment, you know, hanging. I went for a visit and I stayed overnight. So I'm walking around in sweatpants and a t-shirt. And, you know, the cat decides it's a good idea to launch itself at me and just grab on wherever the claws will catch. And I narrowly averted absolute disaster. So.
Yes, cats don't particularly care where they latch on to.
No,
so long as they can sink their claws into something, they're happy.
Yeah, and she's a climber from when she was tiny. When we first brought her home, you know, she's just a climber. Like they are, they're curious and they want to climb. And if she thinks there's remote chance there might be some sort of food involved,
right?
You know, she's very much like a dog in that respect. She's very food motivated and it's hilarious.
Oh, that's cool. London isn't. She's not a foodie. She just eats to sustain herself, I believe, because she really, as I've mentioned before, she doesn't eat wet food. She doesn't like it. So I have to get these things called little supers, so she gets extra, you know, hydrated aside from the water. But everything else is dry food, and even then, it's only specific brands that she'll eat. But I have to have two, and feed her a different one in the morning and at night, because if I feed her the same thing twice in one day, she won't eat the second one.
It's fucking amazing, isn't it? They have their every need catered to. And
they're still
and
fucking
yet, yeah, it's like, they're like, fuck you, dad. And in the wild, right, cats would be, yeah, they're predators, but basically in the wild, animals are opportunistic, right? They have to eat what's available because you don't know when the next meal will come along. No, not domestic cats. They're like, fuck you. I want a different flavor for every meal, or... I'm not eating.
And Odetta, my last cat, was like that. She would only eat Fancy Feast, and then it would only be the Fancy Feast and gravy. As far as wet food goes.
Jesus.
She wasn't quite as picky about dry food.
Yeah.
But real quickly, I came across this, and I didn't know certainly not a show's worth of information, but you and I are both Billie Eilish fans. We've established that throughout the course of our show that we both like Billie Eilish. Is that fair to say?
It is very fair to say. I must say, while I might not listen all the time, I do like her, and I do have some songs in my master playlist in Spotify.
Yeah.
So, yep, I like her.
All right, so this is the very first thing that I saw when I opened up Instagram this morning. And it's an interview that she gave with Rolling Stone magazine. And it says, and this is from the Instagram account, Lad Bible, that I follow. And it says, Billie Eilish has revealed she likes to practice the art of self-pleasure in front of the mirror during a recent interview with Rolling Stone. Eilish noted it might be a little TMI, but self-pleasure is an enormous part of her life and a huge, huge help to her as someone with extreme body issues and dysmorphia. And she's quoted as saying, partly because it's happened, it also makes me have such a raw, deep connection to myself and my body and have a love for my body that I have not really ever had. So she fingers herself in front of a mirror, is basically what they're saying.
You know, I heard about that, and then that's all I could think about the whole rest of that day, being honest.
So, yeah, I'm thinking about this, and the first thing that went through my head was, you know, by the time I got off the couch into the mirror in the bathroom, I'm done.
So, you know. I tried that once, and I threw up. Right.
There are certain things I don't want to see, and me jerking off is one of them.
Yeah, 100%, dude. Like, oh my God, it's one thing if an attractive person is talking about doing that in front of a mirror. You and I, not so much.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh my God.
It just was such an odd thing to read. Maybe it just seems odd because it literally was the first thing that I saw this morning. But you teach me to not open Instagram at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. You know what, though? All kidding aside, good for her, man, for just saying, yeah, I'm going to talk about this, and I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, well, you know, because specifically because she's a woman, because there's this myth that for some reason men think women don't masturbate. And in spite of the plethora of dildos, everything that you can purchase at an adult bookstore or online, somehow men still seem to get in their head that women don't self-pleasure themselves.
I don't know. I never thought that they didn't, but maybe so. Again, as evidenced by the fact that, you know, speaking of which, so every year I go to Exotica, you know, the adult convention, yeah, here in New Jersey, and I look at some of that stuff and I'm like, no wonder women complain that the average man can't satisfy them. You know, they're pleasuring themselves with a freaking baby arm, and then they want to know why. You know, yeah, the average dude can't measure up. It's like you turned your vagina into a construction site, and you want to know.
It's like dropping the nub of a pencil into the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Yeah, a hot dog down a hallway, you know, and you're like, oh, well, okay.
So, yes, folks, this is how we're starting our
show. Yeah, we veered right off into the ditch right away this time. No pretense whatsoever. Oh, my God.
So another real quick thing, then we'll get into the show.
Okay.
I have found, I believe, a narrator for The Tree of Everlasting Sorrow, and I sent the contract over to him this morning.
Nice.
So hopefully everything will work well, and you should get your copy of the audiobook beginning of June or so.
Oh, that's awesome, dude.
Beginning to middle of June, yeah. Nice. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, man, I'm excited.
Yeah, you know? And the ebook is now available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, and pretty much every place else you can get the ebook. The paperback version will be out in a couple of weeks, and then a hardcover will be out early this summer.
You know, I could probably just find this out myself, but I want to Tree of Everlasting Sorrow. Can I order it ahead? I can. Oh,
you,
no, I
you
can't.
Get the only ebook, but
okay,
the,
I thought I might be able to place a pre-order for the paperback.
You can't yet because okay. I haven't done that.
No problem. Because then I'll forget, you know?
Like, well, I will remind you constantly.
That's true. That's true. So, all right. Before we get started on the topic, I just want to talk about, this past weekend, I was at New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival, which I frequently cover, you know, as press. And that was a fun time. I managed to score interviews with Kathy Najimy from Hocus Sister Pocus Act. And Sister Act. Yeah, she was really cool. And, you know, because I'm a rock and roll fan, I'm a child of the 80s, I scored an interview with Gina Schock, the drummer for the Go-Go's.
Nice.
And that was really cool. Like, she was really awesome. And then, you know, the interviews I try to keep brief, you know, because they're there not to talk to me, but to meet fans and sell autographs and books and stuff. But it was really cool. And then, you know, when there was a little, there would be a little bit of a lull in the con, I would harass her. And she told me some really cool rock and roll stories. And then she gave me a copy of her book, which I thought was very kind of her.
Nice.
You know, so I'm going to read that. I love reading about rock and roll history.
And oh, stuff. That you'll read.
You know, it's mostly pictures. So, you know, but that was cool. You know, did some interviews with, you know, my sweetheart, Felissa Rose, of course, and a bunch of other people. So that was a lot of fun. They had a red carpet event for the first time. So I was there doing interviews there. And I actually wore like a jacket, like a blazer. So I clean up kind of nice. So that was kind of fun. And then, you know, people saw on my social media, I had an exclusive interview with Tom Ryan and Michael Hargrove, who was in the most recent Candyman film. They are going to be collaborating on a film from Showtown America Pictures called Bitter Souls.
Awesome.
Michael is starring in it and Tom is directing. So if you go to my Facebook page, you know, The Horror Nerd, or go to my YouTube channel, The Horror Nerd, there's the video there that we shot at New Jersey Horror Con to make the announcement. So I was very, very excited about that. So stay tuned, you know, follow my website, horrornerd.net and theaterofterror.net, you know, and our socials for more information about that. I'm not entirely sure what, if any, my role in the actual film will be, but I will be covering it, you know, from a press standpoint, you know, as far as announcements and stuff at the very least. So okay. That was very exciting.
That is exciting. And one quick celebrity death to talk about. Celebrity kind of in quotes on this, but Ray Garten, horror author, who became a friend of mine years ago on MySpace, of all places, passed away over the weekend. The last post that he had was from April 8th, when he was in the hospital being treated for stage 4 lung cancer. And then his wife posted on Monday that he had passed away over the weekend. So my condolences to his family and friends. And Ray, aside from being a very nice guy, he sent me some fudge his wife had made for Christmas one year. And it was the best fudge I ever had my entire life. And I asked him for the recipe, but his wife wouldn't give it up.
I don't blame her.
Yeah. Because I would market that shit in a minute because it's that good. But he was very supportive of my own writing. And he was a very nice guy. And he's going to be missed. And as I said on Facebook, the horror community is a little less scary now that Ray's no longer around.
Indeed. Indeed. So also in the celebrity death arena, on the musical side, Dickie Betts, who was a founding member of the Allman Brothers Band, passed away last week. Yes. So, yeah, I was a big fan of the Allman Brothers, you know, and of Dickie Betts' music. I saw him live quite a few times. Yeah, so just, again, man, I say it all the time. All my rock and roll heroes are getting old and leaving this this earthly plane. So
enjoy them while you can.
Rock on, Dickie Betts.
All right, so this week our topic, and we do have one, and it's one I somewhat prepared for too.
Me too, believe it or not.
Our favorite movie musicals, because you think you said that you thought we had done our favorite musicals, and I think you're probably right about that.
The main reason I think that is because I remember you mocking me because I said the Phantom of the Opera was my favorite Broadway musical.
That's
so
right.
That's why I remember us doing Broadway.
And that's deserving of mocking. But I'm telling you, if that fucking movie is in your list.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I guess we'll find out, won't we? But it is our favorite movie musicals. And I had to think about this because there's a lot of musicals that I love.
There are.
But as far as movie musicals, the list isn't quite as long. So I decided, well, let's talk about that this week. And so that's what we're going to do.
All right. And I'm quite sure that we will have some duplicates. So it's probably going to be, it's going to come down to like who goes first. You know what I mean? So you can go ahead and go first if you want.
All right, so my first one is, well, it's fairly old now. It came out in 78, 79, I think. Grease is one of my. Is that on your list?
Of course it is.
You know, John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John, Sid Caesar. What's her face?
I know who you're talking about. She played the principal, right?
Yes. Yes. I can't think. Oh, Eve Arden.
Yes.
Great cast. Great, great music. It's a soundtrack that I still kind of listen to today. As a matter of fact, maybe I'll listen to it on the way to work. I don't know that the message of the movie would translate well to 2024 sensibilities, you know, that being if you want the guy that you love, just become a slug.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure that would fly today. But regardless, it's still a fun movie, even though everybody is in high school and they look like, you know, they're in their 30s. And you know, they're not. I think John Travolta was in his 20s or something. But even still, none of them are ever going to be mistaken for high school students. But that's really not the point. It's just, it's a lot of fun. That's when I found out John Travolta could actually sing and dance.
Yeah.
I think, because that was before Saturday Night Fever, I believe.
I think so.
But, you know, whether it was or not, that's the one I remember him seeing him in first, being able to sing and dance, because Saturday Night Fever was rated R and I wasn't allowed to see it when it came out. Then they had that bastardized, awful PG version, which really ruined the movie. But I absolutely love Grease. And I even liked the live version that they did a few years back of Grease.
You know, I never saw that.
It's well worth checking out at some point. It was a lot of fun. The camera work in it was really amazing. They had a lot of tracking shots in it, which I thought, you know, which are difficult to do under the best of circumstances when you're not doing something live. But when you are doing it live and it's, you know, a reenactment of a Broadway show, it's even more impressive. And I don't remember anybody that was in the cast, but it was still very worthwhile to watch. It's just one of those great shows, you know. It's hard to fuck it up.
Agreed. You know, it's funny. I have people, like, every once in a while it'll come up on my social media. There are people who insist that Grease 2 is better.
And those people need to be shot.
Yeah, those, and they would be wrong. Yeah. I don't hate it, but it can't compare. Like, come on. Like, it can't. And as much as I love Michelle Pfeiffer, Olivia Newton-John, she ain't. Sorry.
Well, exactly. And name one song from Grease 2.
Exactly. I can't. I can.
Yeah, you know, I can list pretty much every song from Grease, but I... And although, to be fair, I've only seen Grease 2 maybe once, and that was not long after it came out. So, you know, my opinion on it may change now if I ever decide to be a guinea pig and really, really bored one day and watch it again. But I don't think that time is coming anytime soon.
Yep. And in the words of Principal McGee, if you can't be an athlete, then be an athletic supporter. I love that line, busts me up every time.
And it's her.
Yep.
The way she says it. You know, it's her delivery on that is impeccable. All right. So what's your first one?
All right. So my first one is, because I will never not absolutely love, like many people, Marilyn Monroe, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Yep. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Think about how many other, I mean, Madonna ripped it off. You know, I forget, someone else did a video very similar. There have been so many ripoffs. And it just highlight, like, you can look at that movie and say, oh, you know, it's just a musical, it's Hollywood fluff. But if you look a little deeper, it just highlights how good of an actress and performer Marilyn Monroe really was. You know how I feel about her and the movie that shall not be named. But I think she's highly, highly underrated by a lot of people as an actress. People just think of the blonde bombshell, you know, and the sex appeal. And don't get me wrong, I think about that too. But just, and I'm just such a fan of, like, old school Hollywood. And this is a great example of just a Hollywood musical of that era. And I can just see it in my mind right now without even looking at an actual photo, the dress, you know, and the musical number, and Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. I just love the whole movie. So that's going to be my first one, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Good choice. I haven't seen that in for a very, very long time. So that's something I may need to check out again.
Oh, and Jane Russell is awesome in it too. You know, I mean, let's not let that slide. And I'm a big fan of hers as well.
So, yeah, no, it was great, great cast.
Yeah.
All right. So my second one is, I would bet if you had to list the movies that I would talk about on the show, this wouldn't even come on the radar. If you even remember it, but it's Steve Martin's Pennies from Heaven.
You're right, man. I never would have thought of that.
It's
good one, though.
Yeah, it was his first and really only, as far as I know, serious role. He co-stars in it with Bernadette Peters. They just come off doing The Jerk, and then they went into doing Pennies from Heaven. And it, you know, it's a musical in the sense that there's music in it, but a lot of it is lip syncing to the originals songs that are in the movie. It's to my knowledge, I don't know that there's any original songs for it, but I still consider it a musical because, you know, the story is told through the songs. And it's fantastic. I mean, it got pilloried and massacred when it came out. And it's one of those movies that in hindsight, you know, 20, 30 years down the line, people realize, you know, what a good movie it is. And it's, you know, unlike most musicals that tend to have kind of a lighthearted, happy tone, Pennies from Heaven is really kind of dark and depressing. It takes place during the Depression. And Steve Martin is a guy who, like a lot of his movies, just a normal schlub trying to find love. And it just really is, it shows another side of Steve Martin, shows just how versatile he is. And what a great dancer. I mean, we all know he's a great physical comedian. All of Me, the movie he was in with Lily Tomlin, shows that. But he really was a fantastic tap dancer in that movie. And it's, as I said, it's, you know, not a feel-good movie, but it's a movie that you're glad that you've seen. And it was directed by Frank Oz, of all people.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh. Who says this show isn't educational?
Right? It's meaningless information that we have, but it's still, you know, educational nonetheless.
Okay, good one. All right, so my next one is maybe a little bit off the beaten path because it's got like a horror slant to it, but I couldn't not include it. And it didn't occur to me because I was really focused on like what people think of as like a typical musical, like the big MGM musicals of like the 40s and 50s and stuff. So, and then this one just slammed itself into my brain. And that is from 1974, Phantom of the Paradise.
Yep. That was on my shortlist.
Okay. Yep. So it's a Phantom of the Paradise. For those who don't know, it's a rock musical, comedy, horror. it was written and directed by Brian De Palma, and it was scored by, and it stars Paul Williams. So
yeah,
there is some heavyweight talent, you know, behind this movie. So it's loosely based on the Phantom of the Opera, and I guess maybe Faust and Picture of Dorian Gray. But, you know, it's about a singer-songwriter who gets fucked over by a record producer played by, you know, Paul Williams, when he's going to open this theater, and he becomes this figure that haunts the theater, you know, and wackiness ensues. But it's a way better film, I think, than it gets credit for. Yes, it's a little campy, you know, the costume that the Phantom wears is like an owl kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a little weird, but I like it for its weirdness. Jessica Harper plays the lead female role, and she's more famous for Suspiria. But it's got songs in it like, of course, now I can't. Special to Me, which is in my playlist on Spotify. So it's got, you know, it's actually got good songs in it, which is not surprising because of Paul Williams, you know? So, yeah, and you and I are both a big De Palma fan, so there's a lot of his usual tricks, you know, some split screen stuff and the comic panel kind of style. So, yeah, I've always loved this one, and I know, like I said, when people think of movie musicals, they don't typically think of this one, but I do. So that's my second choice, the second one, Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, no, as I said, that was on my short list, and that was really kind of
not surprised.
the height of Paul Williams' popularity.
Yes.
Because he was, well, still is, I suppose, a very prolific songwriter and has written songs that people may not know he wrote, but know the songs instantaneously. And he wrote one of my favorite songs as the theme for a movie with George Segal and Goldie Hawn, The Duchess and the Dirt Water Fox.
Mm.
And the song for that, Lollipops and Rainbows or something like that. It's a great song. And he was good in that. I mean, people may remember him as Lil Enos from Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of the sequels.
Yep.
But, you know, I'll remember him from Phantom of the Paradise. Is he, again, another one that you wouldn't expect to be a good dramatic actor, and he was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this is a movie that really has an undeserved reputation, I feel, because it's a solid movie. And I saw it not that long ago. Well, within the last couple of years. And it still holds up. You know, it really does. It's a great movie.
For sure.
All right, so my next one, one of my all-time favorite musicals, though I never really talk about it, oddly enough, and it's the movie version of Man of La Mancha with Peter O'Toole, plays Don Quixote, James Coco plays his sidekick, and then there's the wonderfully talented and gorgeous Sophia Loren.
Sophia.
And I think that's all I need to say, Sophia Loren, for you to go into the catatonic state. Now, to be fair, Peter O'Toole didn't do his own singing in it. You know, he had somebody, you know, stand in for him. But the person that does his singing sounds a lot like him. And even with that, Peter O'Toole's performance in it is just magnificent. And James Coco as Sancho is just a lot of fun. And is it a great adaptation? Probably not. But again, as we say when we do these list shows, these are about our favorites, not necessarily the best.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
But this is a lot of fun. And I've always loved Man of La Mancha, The Impossible Dream being one of my favorite songs. Although nobody can top Richard Carley's version of it from the original Broadway soundtrack. The singer who stands in for Peter O'Toole does a fantastic job. And it just gets you right in the feels at the end when he's on the floor dying and he gets a second wind and starts singing, you know, I'm the Man of La Mancha, and then he keels over and dies. Spoiler alert, I suppose.
Whoops.
But anybody who's not familiar with Man of La Mancha or, you know, the novel Don Quixote by Miguel Cervantes, what are you doing with your life?
I agree. Okay. Dude, so you talk about preparing, right? So again, because I know sometimes we duplicate and we try to keep our list to five. I had a lot more than five on my list because you know that I'm a big fan of musicals. So I'm like,
yeah,
all right, I'm going to narrow this down at the last fucking possible second while we're literally doing the show. But so again, I have a mix of things that are considered classic musicals, but they're classic for a reason. So for my next one, I'm going with one that everybody knows, but it's great. And it's Fred and Ginger at the top of their game. Speaking of top, the film is Top Hat.
Ah, okay.
I love Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers together. Even my daughter, like when she was younger and first was really, really getting into dance really strong, I would show her like YouTube clips of famous, you know, famous numbers from Hollywood musicals or from Broadway shows. And she came and told me once that in her music class, they were talking about, you know, dancers. And then she, I think she was maybe in sixth grade, maybe. And she raised her hand and said, but what about Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers? And the teacher was like, well, what do you know about Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers? You're like 12. And she's like, oh, my dad shows me their videos all the time and they're amazing. So, yeah. So Top Hat to me is just one of those. It just makes you feel good watching it.
Oh, yeah. You know?
It's a comedy when it's a lot of fun. And, you know, the dance numbers are incredible. Ginger has legs for days and days and days. So there's that. But this is just between this and I think the Gay Divorcee, this is probably my favorite Fred and Ginger movie. And I don't think musicals really sell today, you know, for the most part. So I don't think we'll see like the likes of them ever again. You know?
No, probably not.
So, I mean, Cheek to Cheek, Top Hat, White Tie and Tails, so many great songs.
Yeah, it was Cole Porter.
Yeah, I mean, so you really can't go wrong. So, wait, wasn't it Irving Berlin?
Or maybe it was Irving
Berlin. Yeah, I think it was Irving Berlin. You said Cole Porter and I just accepted it.
As you should.
Yes, I mean, but at first I didn't think you were wrong, but then I'm like, wait a second, I don't think it was him. I think it was Irving Berlin.
Oh, wait, if only there were a way to find out.
Let's see. Here we are. Yep, Irving Berlin's first complete film score since 1930.
Okay.
So the movie was made. The total budget for the movie was $620,000. Jesus. Right? So yeah. How crazy is that, right? But now, since we're doing this episode about musicals, now I want to go back and watch a bunch of them.
Yeah,
you know?
I do.
Or even just watch clips, you know, like that. Because, again, when work starts driving me crazy, I'm like, oh, let's watch a good music video on.
Well, you know what's perfect for that is those movies that Gene Kelly narrated. That's entertainment.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah.
I love those. In fact, I thought about that, putting those just kind of as a group on my list. But then I said, no, those aren't really movies, musicals per se.
Yeah, and you know? they're more focused on the dancing than they are anything else.
Yeah, but I do love them. I do love those. So
they're hard to track down too.
They are,
which is a shame because you know, that's Hollywood history right there.
Yep.
I mean, that really encapsulates early Hollywood like nothing else does. So all right, so what do I got next on my list? I have, and I know this is going to be on yours and I just can't help it, but West Side Story.
There you go. I knew it.
And I will say this. In this particular case, I will take either version, the new version that came out a few years ago or the original.
You know, it's funny you say that. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I put the same thing on my list. I have West Side Story - both. I just combined them.
I literally do not like one more than the other. If there's a bias, it would be a little bit towards the original, simply because that's the one that I grew up with.
Sure.
But Spielberg's version is absolutely top-notch. You know, what's there to say about that musical? You know, the lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, although I know in later interviews in his life, he talked about how he felt a lot of it was kind of cringy. Some of the lyrics, and he would have done it differently. But, you know, that was his first major coup as far as, you know, a lyricist and composer goes.
Sure.
And then you have the music by Leonard Bernstein. You know, you just can't go wrong with that musical. And two of the actors in it, Russ Beamer and, I can't remember his name now. but they were both in Twin Peaks. And every time I saw them on screen in Twin Peaks, all I could think about was them busting out into song.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, go ahead.
Such an amazing, amazing musical.
I agree, man. You know, it's so funny because, you know, my daughter saw Spielberg's version first. And, you know, I insisted that she watch the original for comparison. And of course, at the time, she was like 17, and in her, oh my God, I'm so progressive phase. And of course, all she could think about was Natalie Wood being cast as Maria. Yeah. And I'm like, Olivia, I get it. Like, trust me, everybody gets it. You just have to understand, like everything else, the movie was a product of its time.
Yep.
And you can go back and say, well, they were wrong back then. Okay. Yeah. I don't know that anyone is disputing that, you know, that would it have been better to cast, you know, an ethnic person? Well, yeah, but Hollywood at the time was different. I'm not condoning it or justifying it, but if you're going to get hung up on that, you're never going to enjoy a movie from the 40s, 50s, 60s. You just won't. So, yeah. You know, you kind of just have to say, well, it was made at a particular time. You know, Breakfast at Tiffany's is, what's his name? Mickey Rooney's character, like, highly offensive. Yes, it fucking is. But that doesn't mean I don't like that movie and I don't love, you know, Audrey Hepburn. And you know what I mean? So,
yeah, no,
I don't know. Totally you right. can get too bogged down in that, you know. But anyway, you know, we talked about when the remake came out. What I like a little bit better, and it's just because the movie making techniques is just, to me, like the scenery and the colors are so much more vibrant, you know.
No, you're absolutely
and
right.
The way they pop, like, you know, the dresses and everything when they spin and whatnot is just freaking awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
and I love some of the changes that they made. The way they do keep cool.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Totally different character singing it, but in the new version, it actually makes more sense doing it that way.
Agreed. Agreed.
It's you know, yeah, it's fantastic. And I remember an interview with Rita Moreno when she was talking about West Side Story, and she's ethnic, and they made her darken her skin.
Really?
To play what's her face, Anita. Yeah,
I did not know that. Huh?
Yeah, they didn't think she was ethnic enough looking.
Rita Moreno. Fucking Moreno. Yeah. Sorry.
Can you be more Puerto Rican?
Todd, you're not bald enough for this role. Is there anything you can do about that?
Yeah.
Can you like peel it down to the skull, please? Jesus Christ, God, people are stupid. All right. So let's see. I am looking at my list here, trying to think what do I want to pull? So, all right. This one is a little more recent, and I will be honest, I take a lot of grief from my friends because I like this movie. But I tell them, look, you can just fuck all the way off. And it's The Greatest Showman with Hugh Jackman.
Mm.
It's a little bombastic, I guess, but I like it. I like the costumes. I like the characters. I like the musical numbers. It's got, it's very touching, you know, underneath. I find it fascinating, the whole backstory behind the music, where, you know, especially Never Enough, you know, the actress who plays the character doesn't actually sing the song. It's Lauren Allred behind the scenes. And then years later, she came out and said, oh, I'm going to make a singing career for myself. So that whole thing was interesting. Like, and then I thought, is it easier to find an actress who can't sing or a singer who can't act? I don't know. But I like it. The life and times of P.T. Barnum is just such an interesting story in itself. And the fact that they turned it into this musical, I'm sorry. I like it, and I'm tired of apologizing for it. It's a guilty pleasure. And if you really look, it's got some good songs. A Million Dreams is great. Never Enough is great. I like it, and I'm no longer apologizing for it. God damn it. So there you go. The Greatest Showman.
Well, time for some truth here.
Oh God.
I never saw it.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna tell me this is this is where Scott tells me my friends are right.
No, I never saw it. I knew it was about P.T. Barnum, but here's the thing. I absolutely love the musical Barnum with Jim Dale.
Yeah, it's great. It is great.
And I couldn't imagine anything being better than that, so I never really had an interest in watching it. But maybe I will check it out at some point.
I would just be curious to see what you think. I think you will like it, but then it also occurs to me that it might be one of these where you're like, Todd, you're nuts, and your friends are right for mocking you over this movie.
You know, and there's always that possibility.
Yeah.
But I like Hugh Jackman. So there's really no reason for me to not like it. I like the story of Barnum. You're right. It's a very interesting story. His entire life was just, amazing. So maybe I will check that out, and I will report back if I watch that sometime before we stop recording these shows. All right. So I'm at, number four now, right?
No, we are at number five.
We are. Oh, that's yes. Right. Because I forgot I made a substitution on the fly too, but I didn't mention that. All right, so my last one is also the very first musical I ever saw. It may be the first movie I ever saw in a movie theater. And I remember specifically my mom and I, my mom took me to see this, and it was at, I think it was at the Lowy's Theater right outside of South Shore Mall. And I was maybe four, I think, when I saw it, and it left such an impression on me. I remember it 54 years later, and that's Oliver.
Ooh, good one.
I
don't know why that wasn't on my list.
I absolutely love that score. Love the musical. Absolutely love Fagin. Ron Moody is Fagin. He will always be Fagin. Anybody else is just a pale comparison. You know, a 13th January Xerox of his performance. And, you know, Mark Lester actually has Oliver's, surprisingly for me, I think the weakest aspect, because he's not a very good actor, and he didn't do his singing in the movie because he was an awful singer, according to him in interviews I've read. But the kid who played the Artful Dodger, who went on to star in H.R. Puffin stuff, and I can't remember his name either, was fantastic. It's just got such, a great score, Consider Yourself at Home. And the whole big production number.
Jack Wilde was the Artful Dodger.
Yeah. Yep. And that whole song, that's like 7 or 8 minutes long, as they're going through the streets of London and, getting up to shenanigans and stealing fruit and running from people. The police, and it's just a great, great musical. And of course, it's got Oliver Reed in it as well, who plays Bill Sykes, the villain of the piece. And it just, there's, if you don't like Oliver, you have no soul. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I can't, how did I not think of Oliver? That is a good one.
In fact, it was also the very first movie my friend Chris and I watched together. It was the very first time we met. His uncle was married to my aunt. And so his parents and my parents had become friends over the years. And so the first time that I went over and met him, Oliver happened to be on, and he was as much into musicals as I was. So we had a good old time, and we bonded over Oliver, and we still talk about that, you know, 50 some odd years later.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, so what's your last one?
All right. Oh, boy. Well, you know what? I mentioned, like, the Golden Age. I mentioned the great MGM movie musicals. And not just, you know, narrowing it down even further, I knew I had to have a Vincente Minnelli movie on the list, you know? So for my last one, I'm going to go with Meet Me in St. Louis.
All right.
Again, just because I'm such a big fan of those musicals, I will always love me some Judy Garland. Margaret O'Brien is also in this. June Lockhart, Mary Astor. It produced one of my favorite Christmas songs, which is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Yep.
Specifically Judy Garland's version. I mean, it's been covered 7 million times, but... Again, it's just the typical big MGM lush movie musical of that time. Vincente Minnelli, I'm a huge fan of all of his movies. So I was like, all right, which one am I going to go with? And I'm like, okay, this one, just because of Judy Garland. I mean, the trolley song, The Boy Next Door, like so many hits came because of this. Of this film. And, you know, for those who don't know, it's really very simple. It's just a series of like little vignettes, you know, and it's the story of a year in the life of a family in St. Louis, you know, and it's just these little vignettes, you know, and it's just really cool. The set pieces, the costumes are amazing. It's just classic, just vintage Hollywood, you know, and it's just shit that I love.
Yeah, that was actually one of my mom's favorite musicals, too.
Mm.
That and Kiss Me, Kate.
Oh, yeah, good one.
I'm going to say right now, I'm very surprised that The Wizard of Oz was not on your list.
Dude, so there are two that were immediately came to mind. And then I said, you know what? I love them. But they're so, like, they're on everyone's top list. The Wizard of Oz and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yep.
You know, it's like when we do top five horror movies and we say, oh, The Exorcist, you know, it's like, yeah, obvious. They were just a little too obvious to me. And as much as I love them, there's others that I also love, you know? So I'm like, those are kind of givens, you know? Yeah. And so I deliberately did not say either one of them.
You're right. And I put Singing in the Rain in that category too.
That one was on sort of my medium list. And I was deliberating whether or not to say it. There's a lot that you could, you could say West Side Story. You know, goes in that category. But again, we said what are our favorites, not what are the best, you know, or whatever. So we could do a part two of this,
absolutely.
At some point, because my list has a lot more than five on it, let me tell you.
Well, trust me, we will, because, you know, after 10 years, we run out of things to say.
So did you remember this time to come up with one that you hate?
Yes, I did. And it's okay. It's going to shock people because it's my favorite Broadway musical.
Controversy inbound.
It's coming. But it's Sweeney Todd. I dislike the movie version in ways I can't even enunciate. And for me, it's the casting, really. You know, boils down to Johnny Depp and
Helena Bonham Carter.
Tim Burton's wife. What's her face?
Yeah, Helena Bonham Carter.
And I know you like Helena Bonham Carter.
I do.
And I like her in certain things, but I just thought she was wrong for Mrs. Lovett. I absolutely felt it when it came out, and I felt that now. You know, they truncated a lot of songs. They omitted some songs, and it's just not a very good version. And the only people that like it are Johnny Depp diehards. You know, anybody else who has a modicum of taste and civility knows that it's not a good adaptation.
Well, I feel the same way about the movie version of The Phantom of the Opera. That's my favorite musical. And when they said, now, Emmy Rossum, I can understand because she is a singer. Gerard Butler, okay, he's handsome, but singing, I just was not impressed, yeah. You know? So I get where you're coming from. I don't dislike Sweeney Todd, maybe to your degree, but I don't like it either. I agree that they were miscast because it was viewed as, oh, we're making a horror movie that happens to have singing in it, you know? Yep. So Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter are a couple of weirdos. So let's put them in the movie, you know? So I agree with you.
Yeah, and that is a movie that actually needs singers who can act as opposed to actors who can kind of carry a tune.
I agree.
That's a very difficult score to sing. Very difficult. And it breaks my heart. I hope they remake that and get people in it who can actually play the roles. Now, having heard the new version with Josh Groban, if they ever made another movie of it, I wouldn't mind seeing him as Sweeney. He would do a fantastic job in the movie. He did a fantastic job on Broadway, or at least from the soundtrack, from what I saw. And I saw him
around the holidays. A friend of mine wanted to go, so I went to see him, and he was excellent.
So I wouldn't mind him in it. All right, so that was your bad one, was Phantom of the Opera.
Well, I only mentioned that one because you mentioned Sweeney Todd, my actual one. And it's almost goes into the it's so bad, it's good category. And I think people need to watch it just once in their lives, and that's Cats.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Dude, I saw it in the theater because I really wanted to experience, is it that bad? And it's that fucking
bad. You
want
to see James Corden in a 25-foot screen that bad?
Yes. Oh, dude. Now, is it weird that I got oddly aroused by Taylor Swift as a cat? I mean, I don't know. But how watching Sir Ian McKellen make an absolute travesty of himself as a cat in this movie broke my heart. I'm like, dude, you really are you really on such hard times that they wrote you a check and you said yeah? And Dame Judi Dench, like, really? Like, okay.
Yeah, no,
Taylor Swift, James Corden, you know, Rebel Wilson, you could say, well, okay, like, I understand why they were in the movie, but Judi Dench and Ian McKellen are legends, you know? Well, I mean, come on.
I think maybe because of the pedigree of the movie, you know, I mean, it was, you know, the longest running musical on Broadway for a long time, up until Phantom of the Opera smashed that. And, you know, that song Memories is forever going to be in pop culture. You know, it's one of those things, you know, actors don't necessarily have, you know, any control over, you know, how the movie comes out, you know, so when they were doing it, you know, it may have seemed fine, but the end product, yeah, the best thing that you can say is, well, at least they CGI'd out the cat assholes out of it.
Oh, God, dude, you have no idea how badly I want to see that version if it really exists. You just will never know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I've seen Mark Hatt's asshole far more than I want.
Oh, well, yeah, they seem obsessed with making sure you see it as often as possible.
Here, see my asshole.
Here, check it out. Like, okay.
Shit comes out of that. It's not
yeah,
cool.
Like, But yeah, I still maintain that everyone should see Cats the movie once in their life. They owe it to themselves. Just to see it.
Yeah.
Some of the sets are pretty cool. I'll give it that.
Yeah.
Everything else is a pure liquid garbage.
Yeah. And honestly, it was never my favorite musical anyway. Memories is really the only song that I like from it. That and Jellicle Cats, I suppose. But it's, well, I've never been a huge Andrew Lloyd Webber fan. Outside of Evita.
This is why I don't understand why we're friends, but okay.
I mean, outside of Evita, that's the only thing of his that I actually really, really, truly love. No, Evita wasn't even on my list of favorite movie musicals.
Mine either. I don't hate it, but I don't really care for it.
That was a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
No, because that's such a great musical, and it's such a fascinating story, and they just didn't do it justice. Well, anyway.
And there we are.
There we are.
That's our list, and right on, we're wrapping it up right on time.
Yeah. And real quickly, I meant to mention this at the beginning of the show, but I got sidetracked. Today is the 4th anniversary of my mother's death. And so she was a musical fan. I mean, she took me to my very first musical movie. So I'm going to want to kind of dedicate this show in memory of Mom, who actually would have been 83 this past Tuesday, the 22nd. So Monday. And she's very much missed.
Yeah, man, I feel for you, brother. This was 9 years. This last week was 9 years since my mom passed.
And so, it always seems like it just happened yesterday.
Yep. So, respect to your mom. And agreed. I'm happy to dedicate the show to your mom. You talked about her a lot.
Yes.
You know, I feel like I knew her. You know?
Yeah. Wade is the same way. All right. So what have you got going on before
I
start?
Well, like I said, please go to my YouTube channel, The Horror Nerd, and check out the announcement regarding Bitter Souls and my red carpet interviews from New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival. I am busily editing the interviews that I did from the show. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, Gina Schock, Kathy Najimy are two, to name a couple. And I did interview Rashaan Hammond, who played Thudbutt in Hook.
Oh, and cool.
That was cool. So you guys will have to check out that one. So you'll see the interviews start to get posted on my socials. And also, if you have a creepy horror exploitation or dark sci-fi or dark fantasy film you want to submit, find on Film Freeway, Grindhouse Nights Film Festival. Submissions are open. We've got some good stuff coming in, so we would love to check out your film. My illustrious co-host is a judge once again this year.
Yes.
So he is busily evaluating films. At least I hope he is.
Yes, I am.
All right. How about you, my friend?
Well, as I also mentioned at the top of the show, The Tree of Everlasting Sorrow is finally out in ebook version. The paperback will be out in a couple weeks, and then a hardcover version will be out towards the beginning of summer. And the Audible.com audiobook version, will be out June sometime. Early to mid-June. And meanwhile, you can pick up all the other books at Amazon, and you can get the ebooks wherever ebooks are sold, including Apple and Barnes & Noble and Walmart and every place else, and Kobo and whatever, and Smashwords. People tend to like Smashwords, so you can get all of my work there as well.
Fantastic, man. Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you. It took long enough to get it out. And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.